This is Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Melanie Summers, sitting in today for Catherine Landfer. Catherine will be back on Monday. Well, Minneapolis will be at the center of the debate over animal rights over the next several days. The International Society for Animal Genetics begins its annual conference today in downtown Minneapolis. Some 700 scientists from around the world are meeting to discuss their research in such areas as animal genetics, cloning, and the use of animals to develop drugs and organs for transplant into humans. Animal rights activists are gearing up for several days of protests. And this morning we'll talk with Freeman Wickland, the executive director of Compassionate Action for Animals, about what his concerns are about this organization. Mr. Wickland, thanks for being with us this morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, tell us, first of all, what are some of the concerns that you have about the work that the International Society for Animal Genetics is doing? You know, there's researchers from all over the world doing a variety of research into animals. But what is it that bothers you about that?
Certainly. Well, there's... of course, being from an animal group, our concern is primarily the welfare of animals. But when we talk about this genetics conference, we're talking about a huge coalition of people who are concerned about what's happening here. We have faith-based organizations who are concerned about tampering with God's creation. We have environmentalists who are concerned about the potentials for genetic pollution, which is where genetically engineered animals are released into the wild and start breeding and cause problems in that way. There are scientists who are concerned that because they're patenting life, the information is not being shared with other scientists. And also, of course, the ethical concerns that are raised as well. There are, of course, animal protection groups who are concerned about the massive amounts of animal suffering that's caused both in the experiments themselves and in the end result, which is making an animal who is more able to be exploited. There's consumer advocacy groups who are concerned that these genetically engineered products, which are being sold to consumers to be eaten, may have harmful impacts on them in terms of allergic reactions or other harmful reactions. So, I mean, there's a wide variety of people who are concerned about this issue and feel like in America this debate over genetic engineering hasn't had a chance to really develop, and already these products are on the market.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found interesting when I was reading some of the background about this particular organization is that this is really the first time that their conference has been the focus of protests and the focus of this sort of concern. Do you have any thoughts about why that's the case?
Well, I think for the most part they don't want the public to be aware of these changes. Obviously, the European Union has had a very strong reaction against genetic manipulation of plants and animal life. They are concerned about a similar backlash here in the United States, and I think keeping it quiet is one way to sort of put the products on the market without anybody knowing, having everybody eating them, and it sort of makes it easier for them to justify what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Are there particular sorts of experiments and research that's going on that you are most concerned about?
Well, as far as animal use in genetic engineering, it's a horrible situation. They're creating Frankenstein monsters. For example, they created a mouse back in 1988 who's genetically designed to develop cancer spontaneously. And that's how they are born, with this predisposition for developing cancer. And that's just an immense amount of suffering for that animal. Of course, in order to develop animals like that, they have to inject genes from other animals typically into the embryo of the developing mice. And when this is done, oftentimes the mice are born with deformities, with birth defects, with serious genetic health problems that result in sickness, death, and a lot of misery. So really we have a concern with a lot of it. And then with I guess our group is Compassionate Action for Animals, and our primary focus is on animals in agriculture mm-hmm. and the way that they're being treated. Today, we see animals in factory farms where they're confined in overcrowded situations where they're unable to turn around. It's filthy. It's a stressful environment. And instead of giving these animals more space, better living conditions, the geneticists are saying, well, what can we do to make these animals resistant to the diseases that are production-related? And instead of, giving them more care and being more compassionate with them, they're trying to genetically alter them so that they can endure an even more stressful, horrible living environment. And I guess that's because that is our focus. That's what strikes home for me. Mm-hmm. And then these products, of course, will be sent out to humans for consumption.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be a lot of discussion at this conference, and some of the animal genetics research has to do with things like creating animals that have a certain predisposition to, I'm struggling with my vocabulary as well, but having them develop, say, specific proteins that can be used to provide pharmaceuticals for humans, or developing pigs, for example, that will grow organs that can be harvested and will be more of a match for humans, that you could use pig hearts and other organs to provide human transplants. Now, those purposes strike me as, and strike a lot of people, as good things to work for, to improve human health, to address some of the issues involving human health and, you know, the shortage of organ donations and that sort of thing. So doesn't that make sense to do that sort of thing to help the human population?
There's a few ways I want to respond to that. The first one is with xenotransplantation, which is taking an organ from one animal and placing it in another, mm-hmm. you have a severe potential for viruses that are benign in the animal to be transported, planted into a human, and become very lethal. AIDS is certainly one example of that, where we believe the origins of this is a simian virus, or a primate. It came from a primate.
Mm-hmm.
And now with, taking pigs, we can't screen for viruses. We can't screen for what we don't know exists. So that's one problem that's a concern with xenotransplants. A second thing here is if we look at the ethics of it, what we're seeing is we are justifying the violation and violence and harm to an individual based on our perceived benefits. And to me, that's not a really ethical position. That is a master-slave dichotomy, where the victim is being objectified. They're not being seen as a living being with a personality and individual nature. They're seen as an object, as parts that can be extracted from them for our alleged benefits. And it's a master-slave mentality that is causing massive amounts of animal suffering. And I think it's the same sort of domination principle that we've had over the environment that's led to a lot of the ecological crises, like the hole in the ozone layer, the global warming. We need to start recognizing the sanctity of life and of nature, and trying to work more with creation and with the natural processes, as opposed to domineering and subjugating it to our will.
The master-slave relationship that you're talking about is something that has been around since the dawn of time, though, hasn't it? I mean, what is the expectation that we would change our attitude now, when our ancestors for thousands and thousands of years have used animals for human good?
Well, I like to think of it in terms of we are extending the circle of our compassion. I mean, there was a time when the only people who had significant protection were wealthy, rich, white males. And slowly over the years, social justice movements have allowed us to respect different races, both sexes. Children have been given rights, and now we're moving into a situation where hopefully we can start expanding those rights to animals as well, so that they don't have to endure this massive amounts of suffering that we inflict on them.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say to those who say that, you know, my health, my father's need for a heart transplant outweighs the value of a pig's life. When that pig, if it weren't bred for harvesting organs, might be bred for pork chops. I mean, what's the difference?
Well, again, I think we're creating a unnatural dichotomy as if it's an either-or option. Mm-hmm. In reality, there are a variety of human-based forms of ethical research that we can do that can help give us information that would be relevant to humans in terms of providing them better health care. There's a lot of preventative measures that we could take to curb cancer, heart disease, and stroke, which are the three main killers in the United States today. And we need to focus more of our resources into those alternatives as opposed to xenotransplants, which, again, you've got the potential for lethal viruses being introduced into the human population. And we can also work to establish better donor banks for human organs and make that process easier for people to donate organs to people who need them.
Our guest this morning is Freeman Wicklund. He's executive director of Compassionate Action for Animals. He's an animal rights activist and has a great deal of concern about some of the research that's being done by the International Society for Animal Genetics. That organization of about 700 scientists and researchers is beginning its annual six-day conference in Minneapolis today. There's been a lot of talk about the possibility for protests around that conference because of the objections that many animal rights activists have towards the sort of genetic research on animals. We're wondering what you think about this. Is it appropriate for scientists to do experimentation on animals to try to develop products that may improve your health someday? Or is it an inappropriate use of animal life to conduct experiments that might be helpful to humans? What do you think about this issue? 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. I know that at least, again, in some of the research that I have done and some of the people who are involved in this conference, one of the things that they are concerned about is maintaining genetic diversity and maintaining viable populations of these animals even while this genetic research is going on. Excuse me. Do you think that, I mean, isn't that one response to some of the concerns that you have?
Certainly it's a response. I think it's a public relations response more than anything else. I think primarily genetic engineering is done for profits, and it's very easy to see this if you look at a company like Monsanto, who's produced Roundup Ready soybeans, which are genetically engineered so that they can withstand greater amounts of herbicides. Of course, the herbicide it can withstand greater amounts of is Roundup, which is their most successful most powerful herbicide that they sell. So you can see they're making money both in selling the Roundup Ready seeds and in selling the herbicides. And it's about profit. If you look at genetic engineering, it's about a lot of these companies are getting more and more consolidated. They're owning more and more of the world's food, or have more power over the world's food supply, and that is going to result in a lack of diversity in terms of food products that are out there. Another harm that's happening is the genetic pollution. People who are raising organic crops next to fields that are raised with genetically engineered crops are finding that there is cross-pollination happening, which is polluting their organic natural foods, and that's definitely a concern that needs to be addressed with as well.
Some of the research into agricultural, you know, products, crops like soybeans and corn and that sort of thing, but also things like dairy cattle and beef cattle and that kind of thing. Over the many years, it hasn't been genetic engineering in the sense that we're talking about now, but, you know, crossbreeding and that sort of thing have resulted in dramatic improvements in the food production to feed our growing population. Again, it seems as though the right end result, the end result is something that we really want, isn't it? I mean, if we had not made those advances, wouldn't we have more people starving across the world?
That's one of the arguments they try to make, is that we can feed a starving world. The reality is they are only going to be able to feed those people who can afford their products. They're here to make money, and if people can't afford them, they're not going to get fed. There's also a lot of political reasons why food isn't distributed equally. And as far as breeding animals for genetic specificity, that has not been very benign either. We are now producing broiler chickens, which are chickens raised for meat, at 3.5 times, they grow 3.5 times faster now than they ever did before. And because of this growth, many of them suffer severe bone deformities as well as metabolic disorders, even though they're slaughtered at a very youthful age of 7 weeks. And an article in Feedstuffs found that 49% of them suffer from very painful fissures and fractures in their bones because they put on weight so fast that their bones cannot even calcify and support them, their own weight. So it's even that has been problematic. But when we compare genetic engineering to crossbreeding of animals or genetic, you know, selectively breeding animals for different traits, it's sort of like comparing the sword, which would be the crossbreeding, mm-hmm. to a nuclear bomb, which would be genetic engineering. Because with genetic engineering, we're taking flounder genes and we're sticking them in you know, tomatoes. I mean, we're doing crazy things. We're putting human genes into fish, into cattle, pigs. I mean, we are crossing species barriers that would never be crossed in another situation.
All right. We have Heather on the line from St. Paul who'd like to join the conversation. Good morning, Heather.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
I wanted to just say that I agree with many of the things that the guest has to say. I'm a veterinary student at the University of Minnesota, and I'm very concerned for the care and compassion of animals. Obviously, I wouldn't have gone into it. But I do want to just disagree with, or just point out maybe, that animal genetics and genetic engineering, or just the science of genetics with animals, can be a very good thing. And I hope that as the protesters line up this next week, that they do realize that there are very good things that are going on at the conference, too. I work in a lab at the university, and we're researching a gene for canine epilepsy. We're trying to find out maybe what causes that, as well as some other diseases that afflict dogs, so that breeders can hopefully not breed dogs that have this disease. And it helps not only the dogs, it helps the breeders, it helps the owners, because it's really hard to see a dog go through multiple seizures every day and finally have to euthanize it for that reason. Mm-hmm.
All right,
another comment, I just heard this randomly as I was driving down the road, about everyone doing genetic engineering for profit. It's not always about profit. We don't know if we can feed the world with how many people are going to be out someday. If we say we're not going to do genetic engineering, we might have to use up more land to grow more food for people. It's trying to be efficient. I understand all the concerns about it, but it has a lot of positives as well as the concerns.
All right, Heather, thanks very much for the call. Mr. Wirkland?
Yeah.
Two major points there.
Sure. So the first thing Heather brought up was genetic engineering to help, you know, companion animals.
Yes.
And I think, again, with, you know, certainly canine epilepsy and animals having seizures is a real problem that nobody wants to see happen. What happens, though, with animals who are genetically engineered, of course, is typically they will, for every one they get that survives, you're going to see dozens of them that are born deformed, and some of them, like a pig who had a human growth hormone gene placed in him, he had crippling arthritis, he had kidney problems, he had you know, his eyes were crossed, he had dermatitis and inflammation of the skin, his heart had grown large. I mean, there's animals who are just being created as monstrosities that have a lot of health problems, and some of them that are born where all they do is have constant seizures all the time. And this is a type of suffering that we're very concerned about. We don't want to see happening.
So are you saying that the research that Heather is talking about might cause that sort of thing to occur in other animals or more frequently as a result of the research?
Well, I'm saying, yeah, the research done causes the animals the same type of suffering. And a lot of the concerns that we have with companion animals are from breeders who are trying to get, you know, like, for example, bulldogs, they want them to have these really big heads. Well, they've been selectively breeding them for that for so long that now you cannot give birth to a bulldog without having them have a cesarean section. Same with a lot of these purebreds who, because they're so inbred, they're getting genetic problems like hip dysplasia and blindness. So I think there's natural ways that we can help curb a lot of these genetic problems in companion animals mm-hmm. that would not entail the suffering caused by the genetic research on them. And as far as her concerns for feeding the world, if we really wanted to free up a lot of our resources, one of the best ways to do that would be to explore a vegan diet, which is a diet free of animal products. And this is because about 80% of the grains that we grow here in the United States are grown so that they can be fed to cattle. The majority of our resources in terms of agriculture, in terms of land, pesticide use, herbicide use, all those things are grown to produce feed for animals or to graze animals. So if we were eating a diet that was lower on the food chain, consisting of grains, beans, rice, fruits and vegetables, we're going to be freeing up a lot more resources to say, you know, to increase our food production overall. But when we're feeding six or anywhere from 7 to 15 pounds of grain to a cow to produce 1 pound of edible beef, you can see there's a lot of resource waste happening there.
All right. Next, we have Roland on the line from Roseville. Good morning.
Hi. I've just got some real questions about the philosophy and that underlies what you're saying. The natural world of animals is a little different than what you're talking about here about worrying about a slave-master relationship with a hog. In the real world, a pack of wolves in northern Minnesota picks out a fawn and chases that fawn and runs after that fawn for 6, 8, 12 hours, gradually snipping its hamstrings with many bites and attacks and then disemboweling it alive. That's the natural world, as icky as it may seem. And the world that you're talking about is like Disney animals. I can't imagine how this has anything to do with reality. It's not the real world. It's not the world that's developed over millions of years. And it seems to me if you reach up like right corner of your mouth, you have something called a canine tooth, which means you're a carnivore. Thank you.
All right, Roland, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, thank you, Roland. You raised some good points, and the way that I would respond to those is that in the real world, there's also a lot of herbivorous animals who do eat purely plant-based diets, who get along with other animals, and as human beings, we have a choice and an ethical responsibility to try to be as compassionate and loving and nonviolent as we can. And I don't think we need to be stingy with our compassion. We can show it to humans, we can show it to animals, we can show it to the environment. I think, and if you look at humans typically, and if you look at our predecessors, the great apes, you find that we are predominantly a vegetarian animal. I think the high rates of heart disease and cancer and stroke caused to, as a result of the high saturated fat and cholesterol diets that we're eating is just one example of the benefits that we would have by exploring a more vegetarian diet, and maybe that we are, as a human beings, more responsive to a vegetarian diet in terms of improving our health.
In a perfect world, what would your perfect world look like?
Well, a perfect world would be one where people really strive to reduce the amount of suffering and violence they cause to animals, each other, and the planet as a whole. I think we would try to be living more in harmony with nature. We'd be learning from evolution and from the way that the world works in the natural setting and trying to mesh with that more than trying to subvert and dominate it so that we can control and manipulate it. You know, with genetic engineering, we've got to ask ourselves, if we ask ourselves, well, how long did it take the chemists to produce a chemical that could destroy the ozone layer? It doesn't matter whether it was 10 years or 100 years. The reality is that they did create that chemical, and we did see a real crisis happening on our planet because of it. Now, with genetic engineering, how long is it going to take for us to create something that's just as problematic as the ozone hole? We don't know. We can't predict what the consequences of this genetic engineering is going to cause.
We're talking this morning with Freeman Wicklund, the executive director of Compassionate Action for Animals. And we're talking to him this morning because he and other animal rights activists have some grave concerns about some of the research that is done by participants at the International Society for Animal Genetics Conference. That conference gets underway today in Minneapolis and runs for the next 6 days. And there has been quite a lot of discussion about the activities that, the researchers take on in their particular laboratories and universities and so on, and whether or not those are appropriate types of activities. Animal rights activists have a great deal of concern about this and are planning to do some various protest activities over the next several days. And we're wondering what you have to say about this. What do you feel about the role of genetic engineering when it comes to manipulating our animal populations? Do you think that that's an appropriate use for animals to help develop drugs or organs that might help humans someday? Or do you think that that's an inappropriate way to approach animals? 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities is the telephone number for you to call, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. I'm Melanie Summers, sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. We'll continue our conversation in just a couple of minutes after we hear the latest in the news from Patty Marsicano.
Thanks, Melanie. Good morning. The Senate has passed a $90 billion plan to cut the taxes of millions of married couples. The Republican measure would benefit 25 million couples who pay more in taxes than if they were single. Democrats say the bill is still too expensive, even after being pared back from its original cost. President Clinton has said he would accept the plan only if Congress adds prescription drug coverage to Medicare. The proposed U.S. missile defense system is taking center stage at the G8 summit in Japan. President Clinton and Russian leader Vladimir Putin failed to make progress on their dispute over the system when they met today in Okinawa. But they say they want to set up a joint U.S.-Russia center for the exchange of data that provides early warning in the event of a missile launch. But Putin remains critical of the U.S. missile shield, and so do other leaders at the summit. The mayor of Denver wants federal officials to help solve problems at United Airlines that he says have led to problems for passengers. Wellington Webb says a labor dispute has caused flights to be delayed and passengers to be stranded at the Denver airport. United spokesman Joe Hopkins notes that federal mediators are already involved in the negotiations with United pilots. In regional news, the Burnsville City Council says a proposed amphitheater does not need a more extensive environmental review. The council voted 4-1 last night to move the Black Dog Amphitheater project ahead without further environmental study. Some Burnsville and Bloomington residents are concerned about noise and traffic and wanted a more extensive environmental review of the proposal. Northern States Power Company has reached a tentative compromise with local governments on a power line across the St. Croix River. The original proposal provoked objections and lawsuits from those who questioned the need for the high voltage line. NSP Regulatory Projects Manager Jim Alder says NSP and its Wisconsin partners scaled back the voltage and will run part of the line underground. The state forecast for today, mostly cloudy in the northeast with a chance of rain, partly cloudy in the south and west, the highs from the upper 60s to the mid 70s. In Rochester, it's 60, in St. Cloud, it's 63, in the Twin Cities, it's 64. That's a news update. I'm Patty Marsicano.
America's prisons are taking on a new burden, becoming warehouses for the mentally ill.
The inmates here are locked in their cell 24 hours a day, but they're also have shown a potential to be highly suicidal.
Listen to the new American Radio Works special, Jailing the Mentally Ill, Tuesday at noon on KNOW-FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Melanie Summers, sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer. Catherine will be back on Monday. We are talking this morning with Freeman Wicklund, the Executive Director of Compassionate Action for Animals, about animal rights activists' concerns over genetic engineering of animals. The International Society for Animal Genetics is meeting in Minneapolis for the next several days, and a lot of animal rights activists say they're going to protest that conference. We've invited Mr. Wicklund here to talk some about what his concerns are about this organization's activities and genetic research in general on animals. We'd also like to remind you that at noon today, on midday, we will talk with an organizer of the Animal Genetics Conference. He is Larry Shook, director of the Food, Animal, and Biotechnology Center at the University of Minnesota, and he will talk more about what the researchers are doing in terms of their work. We invite you to join our conversation this morning if you have a question or comment at 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828. Our next caller on the line is Mike from Buffalo, Minnesota. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I'd just like to correct something Mr. Wicklund said about Roundup Ready soybeans. Roundup Ready soybeans were not developed so that farmers could put on more herbicide. They were put on so that farmers could put on Roundup. The Roundup can get metabolized through the soybean. You get broader spectrum control on weeds, and you could potentially use less herbicide. I mean, this stuff's expensive. If the farmer doesn't have to put it on, he's not going to.
Thanks very much for the call, Mike. Mr. Wicklund, I know, do you have a response for Mike or talk about his the point that he's making?
Well, I think at this point, it's a disagreement on facts. I do believe that there are 27 different corporations and the USDA who are trying to create genetically engineered crops that are able to withstand higher doses of herbicides and pesticides. So it's something that is happening, and it is being done so that these pesticides and herbicides can be sold more and people can use it more liberally. And I think ultimately that's going to sap the nutrients from the soil, and it's going to pollute the areas in which it's used.
Is there research also being done in terms of agricultural crops to produce more crops that are more resistant to insects and to disease and to fungus and that sort of thing? I mean, so that the plants themselves are stronger and won't need as much chemical interactivity.
Well, they are they're introducing certain herbicides into the plants as well, so that animals will, who try to eat the plants will die. Of course, these are crops that are going to be grown for human consumption, and the reality is that a lot of these crops aren't safety tested in long-term tests to see how that's going to impact on humans, and that's where a lot of the consumer advocacy people get in and are very concerned about the potential human harms of eating these genetically engineered products.
Okay. Next on the line is Anne from St. Paul. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. Overall, I agree with Mr. Wicklund's points. I am not an animal rights activist. I am a middle-class professional, and I just have a couple of comments, the first related to the diet discussion. Historically, human beings, really until World War II, people haven't eaten slabs of meat at every meal. Meat was used more sparingly and usually was used to complement a dish as opposed to sitting down and having a big steak and potatoes and salad on the side. And I don't know that we as human beings have evolved. I'm assuming we evolved eating meat, but I don't know that it was to be the core piece of our diet. In any case, the main point I'd like to make is that human beings, especially in the West, need to start discussing the role of technology in our lives. I know that I was raised with the idea or the ideology, which is something we don't question, but the ideology that technology equals progress. Technology is always good. I'm not saying that technology is bad or evil either, but we need to start being more critical of technologies as they're being introduced. Once something is out of the bag, it never goes away. And scientists, I think, need to do a better job of being able to predict in an unbiased, objective fashion whether a technology will introduce benefits that outweigh the negatives. I just am concerned that as we become even more and more technological and more cut off from our biological and evolutionary selves, that we are going to put ourselves in positions that are difficult, increasingly more complicated and difficult to fix or make.
All right, Anne, thanks very much for your call.
Yeah, and I just add, with the technology that we need to start looking towards developing, is technology that really is in harmony with the way the earth works and that is in respect with the animals. I think it's been commonly noted that it's not just the slave, in a slave-master relationship, it's not just the slave who's injured by, being brutalized and being denied justice, but it's also the slave master who is corrupting their higher values of compassion and caring by treating them in such a horrible fashion. And I think that's the way we've developed, where nature is a resource to us It's not of any inherent value. And the same thing with animals. They are our property. They're here for us to use and objectify and do with them as we see fit. And that's just not a conducive way to relate to, you know, the creation.
All right, next is Mark from St. Paul. Good morning, Mark.
Hi. Other than commenting on how inappropriate it is to consider a slave-master relationship and how it belittles a whole segment of our society and our history, I think this is an argument about them trying to enforce on other people in society their beliefs that, I mean, how can you ask us to give up medical benefits that have been gained from animal research? I predict that as these people get older, they're going to want every applicable treatment available that have been gained from animal research and genetic engineering.
Wow, thanks, Mark. You brought up a lot of points there, and I'd love to respond to them all. Your first concern was, how can I relate the human-animal relationship to a master-slave relationship? And I think part of the reason why you're so offended is because in our society, we do view animals so as just such wretched, filthy, vile, wild creatures.
Do you think so, really?
Well, in terms of when people call each other an animal, it's an insult. Mm-hmm. When they say, I was treated like an animal, it means that they were treated unjustly. But when we treat animals like animals, we think it's okay. I just think people don't respect them for their inherent value and for their inherent dignity. And we certainly don't treat them as if they have any dignity. So I think that's why people take offense, is because it's an insult in our society to be compared to an animal, whereas Native Americans would see that as, you know, traditionally as a compliment to be compared with the other nations that share the earth with them.
Can I just interrupt for a second?
Sure.
I mean, since you brought up the Native Americans, I mean, Indian tribes had a very long history of relying on animals to sustain them, right? Buffalo and so on. And again, there's the question of, isn't there this attitude that we have of animals helping us meet our needs for food or whatever, that's just been there for thousands and thousands of years, and asking about changing it right now seems difficult at best.
Well, one thing to respond to that off the bat is that not all Native Americans were carnivores. There's certainly the other Native American traditions that are primarily vegetarian. Also, I think one of the good uses of technology is decreasing our reliance on violence towards animals and violence towards the environment. And now we live in a society where we have thousands of foods to choose from at any grocery store, and we can choose to eat a vegan diet very easily, which sort of ties into Mark's second point, which was that we're trying to, you know, force our beliefs on people.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the reason I'm here today is because I just want to share the truth that I've found. What people do with the information I give is totally up to them. But I'm certainly willing to talk about why I feel passionately about this, why I'm concerned about it, and hopefully get that discussion going so that people know there are other options out there. You don't have to have meat three times a day. You don't have to buy products that are tested on animals, which segues into the concern about medical benefits.
Yes.
From research that
mm-hmm.
Mark brought up. And when we look at research, it's a very complicated issue. But one of the things historically that's happened is the majority of findings from animal research are nothing more than plagiarism of human clinical findings that were found in a clinical setting. And I think
what do you mean by that?
I think the benefits that people say come from animal research have been far exaggerated. The reality is that animals are not little human beings. They have different cellular structure, different genetics, different way their bodies are put together. And because of these differences, they respond differently to different drugs and different procedures than humans do. And for example, Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company Pfizer, did a research study where they took known carcinogens in humans and they tested them in mice and rats to see whether or not the tests would show that these are carcinogenic. Well, it turned out that the test results were correct in less than half of the cases. So it's definitely just a flip of the coin. And when you get to animal research, you find out that like with tobacco companies, they found out that they could use animal research to show how tobacco is not harmful because the majority of animals who are forced to inhale tobacco smoke do not develop the cancerous tumors that clinical researchers were finding in humans repeatedly for decades. And certainly that caused more people to die of this disease because of the confusion they created and because it prevented putting warning labels on cigarettes. I think the way to go for research is human-based research, which would be clinical studies, epidemiological studies, which are like population studies, post-mortem research, and in vitro tests using human tissues. And that's the way to go. And that's where we want to put the money. We don't want it siphoned away to worthless animal research or genetic research.
I'm sure that there are many folks who would argue that the animal research is not worthless, that it informs what those later clinical trials do on humans. But there's lots of concern as well about doing research on humans. And, if you're suggesting that the steps that we take with animals should be foregone and we go directly towards human research, that seems highly problematic as well.
Well, that's the nice thing. Let me rephrase that.
That's the nice thing.
Yeah.
Well, okay. All right.
What I was trying to say is there are a variety of human-based research that we can do before going to the clinical setting. With computer and mathematical models, we can screen for potentially problematic, toxic, cancerous drugs. We can use the in vitro test to test drugs on different human organs, such as skin or liver or kidneys. We can then, do very carefully controlled clinical trials to screen these drugs. When we do animal research, all we're doing is getting a false sense of security that this is telling us anything relevant to humans. It doesn't insure us with anything, and in fact, all from the drugs that were introduced onto the market between 1975 and 1983, I think more than half of them had to be pulled off the market and relabeled or withdrawn entirely because of adverse effects that had not been found during animal tests.
All right. We have Marion on the line next from St. Paul. Good morning, Marion.
Hi, Sam. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
I have a problem with the corporate control of the supposedly state-of-the-art technology and the exclusion of other methods and organizations in this research done by these privileged scientists. And I think that there's a problem. The only way that we can challenge this organization and their methods is in a pre-designated protest area. And so we're going to end up with homogeneous technology benefiting the scientists with no other research done by any other organization. And that's what I think is another huge problem with the ISAG conference and the scientists and animal research and biotechnology as a whole.
Marion, are you planning to be down there to protest?
We'll see.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Marion seems to be indicating that it's just corporations who are doing this research, but there certainly are universities and other entities, nonprofit entities, who are doing a lot of this type of research. Isn't that the case?
Well, what I think she was trying to get at is that this research only benefits large multinational corporations for the most part. It's certainly when we look at factory farming, that is huge mass production of animals in huge complexes that were high capital, high investments, all these things that really push out smaller family farmers. And bioengineering animals for agriculture is definitely going to exacerbate and continue this dynamic of larger scale farms that treat the animals more miserably. So I think that was her concern, is that, and it's the same with the agricultures for crops too. It tends to be a industrial agribusiness that has a monoculture, which is typically bad for the soil and not good for the environment.
Our next caller is Chris from Brooklyn Park. Good morning, Chris.
Hi. I just have a comment. I mean, I love animals. I would do nothing to hurt them. But I have a child who's diabetic, and I know without research and insulin that he and millions of others would be dead right now. So I just wanted to hear the comment on that.
Thanks very much for the call, Chris. Freeman Wickland?
Yeah. I'm trying to recall my files on the diabetic situation. Again, I think what we had here is a situation where the animal researchers plagiarized clinical findings that were originally discovered in humans. The reason we first discovered that diabetics had, or the problem with diabetics, was from autopsy studies, where we discovered that their pancreas was not producing insulin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the majority, so the findings were from humans, and I think even the initial animal tests really delayed and prevented applying the information we had learned from clinical studies because it really confused the situation. Now we've got, you know, so I think, again, that's often the case, is that animal research does kind of confuse and delay results happening because ultimately animal research does not tell us what we need to know about the human condition.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't have any factual information on how that all that research went as well, but so we'll take your word for it at this point. Megan from Minneapolis is on the line next. Good morning, Megan.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I've just been a little concerned about a lot of the media coverage depicting animal rights activists as crazy, violent bombers. They have to board up Orchestra Hall and all mm-hmm. these things. And I was just wondering if Freeman could please comment on his organization's stance on nonviolence.
Wonderful question. Yeah, we at Compassionate Action for Animals, although we're not organizing the demonstration, I want to be clear with that, we do have a very strict nonviolence policy of the Gandhian and Kingian variety, where we try to make sure all of our actions are done respectfully for both, you know, everyone, even our opponents, and that we're open and honest about everything that we do, and we don't, you know, try to hide or conceal our intentions. And I certainly hope that this week is going to be a very good situation of nonviolent civil disobedience as well. A lot of times people are comparing this to the Seattle riots.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
It's interesting that they're not comparing it to the April 16th protests in D.C., where there was no similar problem, but there were thousands of people there. I think people have unfairly prejudged what's going to happen this week and already started condemning people for things they haven't done, and that's really unfortunate.
Well, that's very true, but there have been incidents where ELF, for example, the Animal Liberation Front, broke into labs and released animals and vandalized the labs and caused a lot of damage and that sort of thing. It wasn't violence against a person, but it was certainly what many would consider outside the bounds of legal protest, breaking and entering into labs. So, I mean, there has been some history on the part of some animal rights activists to perhaps step over the line.
Mm-hmm. But I'd be interested to know where the media is getting their statistics on the number of demonstrators they're expecting mm-hmm. and the amount of disorder they're expecting as well. I think a lot of this is possibly just hype created by the conference to distract away from the issues and focus on that as opposed to really discussing the ethics behind genetic engineering.
Do you know, just to ask one more question about this, are you aware of the other groups who are involved in some of the protests and what their stand is on violence or whether what they will tolerate, what they won't?
I honestly don't. I really, I'm just planning on showing up and seeing what's going on and at least being a representative of nonviolence at these demonstrations. But to be honest, I don't know what's planned.
All right. Our next caller is Tom from La Crosse. Good morning, Tom.
Morning.
Hi.
How you doing, Freeman?
Great, thank you.
I got a couple of questions. The insulin thing, sure, they first found that the pancreas wasn't working in the people, and so they did some research. But then when they took dogs, they took the pancreases out, and then they did some different research in order to try and get these dogs to maintain the normal sugar level. And then they was able to do it, but because it was difficult for them to maintain the same level, well, with each batch that they were making, it was difficult for them. And that's how the research went, and that's why it was delayed, because one person was trying to do it, and he couldn't make it the same every time. As far as you made a comment about hip dysplasia and that all these dogs are just being bred for and having hip dysplasia, reputable breeders x-ray their dogs and find out if the dog has hip dysplasia, and then they don't breed those dogs because they want to put out good dogs. And then you also made the comment that we need to learn from evolution. Well, if evolution, first of all, did happen, then evolution said we're survival of the fittest. And thus, we are more fit than dogs, and so we are the superior product of evolution, therefore we have the right to do whatever we want. But then yet, you, at the same time, you say that we have some sort of moral or ethical to treat them. Well, if evolution happened, there are no morals and there are no ethics. It's just strictly whatever we want. We are the top dog in the food chain, so to speak. You also made the comment that animals are not little human beings. Well, that's true. They're not little human beings. That's why they shouldn't be treated as humans. You're applying human suffering, what a human would suffer, to an animal. I have a dog. I hunt with this dog. And the problem I have with the animal, a lot of animal rights activists is that the one thing they want to do is now they want to stop me from using one of the things, and I use it for bird hunting, that it would be an unfair advantage for me to use my dog to hunt birds. And that's what the dog was bred to do. That's what he likes to do. That's what he's good at.
Tom, we're going to have to let you go so we have a chance for Freeman Wicklin to respond. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. You probably need your own show for yourself. As far as evolution, let me explain what I'm talking about there. I think what we can do as far as animal care is look evolutionarily at where they came from. For example, chickens come from their jungle fowl of Southeast Asia. And because of that, they have certain needs that they need to be taken care of. So you're right, they're not little humans. And in so far of how we treat them, they're also not little humans in telling us about the scientific benefits, you know, or the alleged scientific benefits. Things that we learn on animals are not going to apply to humans. But I guess with evolution, I'm just trying to say, if a chicken is a jungle fowl, that means they need to dust bathe, they need access to perching, they need access to nesting and roosting and all these things that allow for them to be healthy and unstressed in the environments that we keep them. And also in terms of just looking for how to raise crops and things of that nature, look at how it's done in the wild with prairies to help prevent runoff and things of that sort. In terms of the survival of the fittest, I really don't believe that might makes right is the ethical dimension that I want to live in. And I think there's nothing wrong with trying to decrease the violence in the world, whether it's to humans or animals. Thank you very much for your comments.
We have time for one very short call from Molly from St. Paul. Good morning, Molly. Can you make it brief?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Really, really supportive of Mr. Wicklund, and
you're
doing some fine work. And the points that you're making about health, I think, are really important for folks to listen to. I work in the area of health, and if folks don't care about the ethical ramifications, then they should definitely care about their own health and keep up with distributing that information. Especially Roland's comment about hunting, wolves hunting a deer, and well, that's quite different. The deer lived in the wild, and they all had to, you know, work hard to get that meat. And most human beings don't hunt in a pack and work really, really hard to get their meat. They, you know, as the other comment was made about eating meat three times a day, that's not good for us.
Molly, I'm going to have to let you go. You have time for a quick parting comment, Mr. Wicklund, before we have to let you go.
Well, certainly, if people are concerned about genetic engineering, some things that they can do is, first and foremost, explore a vegan diet so that, again, we can help free up environmental resources, not cause harm to these animals, not try to put them in more intense factory farms. We can eat organically raised produce, which is not going to be genetically engineered. We can certainly get involved with the protests and the training seminars that are being sponsored by Green Rage at some churches in town. And learn more about these issues. So I want to encourage people who are interested to take action.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Freeman Wicklund is Executive Director of Compassionate Action for Animals. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. Our thanks this week go to our engineers, Jadira Vasquez, Cliff Bentley, and Randy Johnson. Our assistant producer is Gabrielle